Persephone Books presents an unabridged recording of Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day by Winifred Watson, read by Frances McDormand. Chapter 1, 9:15 a.m. to 11:11 a.m. Miss Pettigrew pushed open the door of the employment agency and went in as the clock struck 9:15. She had, as usual, very little hope, but today the principal greeted her with a more cheerful smile. "Ah, Miss Pettigrew, I think we have something for you today. Two came in when I had left last night. Now let me see. Ah, yes. Mrs. Hillary, maid. Miss LaFosse, nursery governess. You'd have thought it was the other way around. But there, I expect she's an aunt with an adopted orphan niece or something." She gave Miss Pettigrew particulars. "There you are, then. Miss LaFosse, 5 Onslow Mansions. The appointment is for 10 sharp this morning. You'll make it nicely."
"Oh, thank you,"
Miss Pettigrew said weakly, nearly fainting with relief. She clutched the card of particulars firmly in her hand. "I'd nearly given up hope. Not many of my kind of post these days." "Not many," agreed Miss Holt. And, as the door closed behind Miss Pettigrew, "I hope that's the last I see of her," thought Miss Holt. Outside on the pavement, Miss Pettigrew shivered slightly. It was a cold, gray, foggy November day with a drizzle of rain in the air. Her coat, of a nondescript, ugly brown, was not very thick. It was 5 years old. London traffic roared about her. Pedestrians hastened to reach their destinations and get out of the depressing atmosphere as quickly as possible. Miss Pettigrew joined the throng, a middle-aged, rather angular lady of medium height, thin through lack of good food, with a timid, defeated expression and terror quite discernible in her eyes, if anyone cared to look. But there was no personal friend or relation in the whole world who knew or cared whether Miss Pettigrew was alive or dead. Miss Pettigrew went to the bus stop to await a bus. She could not afford the fare, but she could still less afford to lose a possible situation by being late. The bus deposited her about 5 minutes' walk from Onslow Mansions, and at 10:07 precisely, she was outside her destination. It was a very exclusive, very opulent, very intimidating block of flats. Miss Pettigrew was conscious of her shabby clothes, her faded gentility, her courage lost through weeks of facing the workhouse. She stood a moment. She prayed silently. "Oh, Lord, if I've ever doubted your benevolence in the past, forgive me and help me now." She added a rider to her prayer, with the first candid confession she had ever made to her conscious mind. "It's my last chance. You know it. I know it." She went in. A porter in the hall eyed her questioningly. Her courage failed at ringing for the lift, so she mounted the main stairway and looked around until she discovered 5. A little plate on the door said, "Miss LaFosse." She looked at her watch, inherited from her mother, waited until it said precisely 10, then rang. There was no answer. She rang again. She waited and rang again. She was not normally so assertive, but fear gave her the courage of desperation. She rang, off and on, for 5 minutes. Suddenly the door flew open, and a young woman stood in the entry. Miss Pettigrew gasped. The creature was so lovely, she called to mind immediately beauties of the screen. Her golden curly hair tumbled untidily about her face. Sleep was still heavy in her eyes, blue as gentians. The lovely rose of youth flushed her cheeks. She wore that kind of foamy robe, no mere dressing gown, worn by the most famous of stars in seduction scenes in the films. Miss Pettigrew was well versed in the etiquette of dress and behavior of young women on the screen. In a dull, miserable existence, her one